London calling. David here. Final thoughts about what was going on in the Pudding Lane neighborhood exactly 354 years ago. The fire had got down into the fuel depot at the foot of London Bridge. The wharves, the docks, the warehouses, the sheds, the cellars, all of them chock-a-block with hay and timber and coal and pitch and tallow and oil and hemp, with flammables. Fire racing through there was like hosing the blaze down with petrol. There was a church there, St. Magnus the Martyr. Sean goes in there on his hidden London walk. Inside there's a model of Old London Bridge. Old London Bridge, as those of you who listened to yesterday's podcast will recall, played a significant role in the Great Fire of London. So, yes, Sean takes his walkers into St. Magnus the Martyr, shows them that model of Old London Bridge. When I say he takes them into St. Magnus the Martyr, I mean, of course, the post-fire church, the church Christopher Wren rebuilt. The old church, the 1666 church, went up in flames. That's worth mentioning, not least because the church tower stood tall and proud. You couldn't miss it. And the flames, bursting through the belfry stages of the church, leaping the height of the tower, was the dramatic first signal to the awed, horrified onlookers that this was no ordinary fire. And yet, at 8 o'clock that first morning, when Samuel Pepys got up and looked out the window, he saw the fire, in his words, not so much as it was. Remember, Pepys's maid, Jane Birch, had awakened him with news of the fire at 3 a.m. He'd looked out of the window. He was living in Seething Lane by the tower, not so very far from Pudding Lane, and had judged it nothing to be very concerned about. And now, 5 hours later, his first daylight impression, not so much as it was that the fire was being brought under control. He was so wrong. How do you account for his gross misjudgment? It was the simple matter of its being daylight. The flames made less display in daylight than they did against the night sky. And then, just a few minutes later, Jane Birch comes up and tells her master that more than 300 houses have been destroyed. The dawning of the awful truth. All of that is so real, so understandable, so true to life. In times of great crisis, flood, famine, war, fire, hurricanes, almost no one sees the big picture, fully grasps what's going on. Rumor, hearsay. Shakespeare understood the phenomenon. Rumor, he said, stuffs the ears of men with false reports. Pepys, I suppose, like just about every other Londoner, believed what he wanted to believe in those first few hours. The Tower of St. Magnus, though, burning like a beacon, and then Jane Birch's report that more than 300 houses had burned down. Those two moments were like hearing the worst possible news in the doctor's consulting room. That sight and that report were the first soundings of London's death knell. Okay, that really is my last word, for this year at any rate, on the Great Fire of London. I'm now passing the torch to my colleague Simon, who will light up the tale with all kinds of dramatic, compelling visuals, the length and breadth of his virtual tour, London's Burning. It goes at 7 p.m. our time, London time, on Sunday, September 6th. Full details on www.walks.com. For the second part of this podcast, How about a few words about the situation generally? I, for one, have zero time for so-called influencers. If Kim Kardashian recommends a certain incense or book, can you imagine Kim Kardashian recommending a book? Or a resort in, say, Mexico? Well, that influences me, all right. Influences me to steer well clear of said incense or book or resort. I like the influencers who aren't influencers. I remember reading about a little old American lady who, whenever it was announced on the news that tourism to Albania or Guatemala or Bali had gone right off the cliff edge, for whatever reason, her instant response was to pick up the telephone, ring her travel agent, and say, "Book me a ticket to Albania, or Guatemala, or Bali." That was her response because she knew those places were going to be a buyer's market. She wasn't going to have a problem getting theater or concert tickets. There were going to be no end of fantastic deals. She was going to be sitting pretty. One of my favorite apothegms is always drink upstream from the herd. And that's what that particular middle-aged American lady does, in spades. I like it. That's my kind of influencer. What's that have to do with now, with London Walks? Well, award-winning guide Adam did his Kensington Walk today. Took four people on it. I took one person on my Westminster Walk. Royal Shakespeare Company actor Steve Noonan took three on his Ripper Walk tonight. Award-winning guide Simon took two on his Ancient City at Night Walk. Cambridge University paleontologist Aaron took one on his Natural History Museum virtual tour tonight. The point here is, this is almost certainly a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. People are getting the equivalent of a private tour for a tenth of what they'd pay for it in normal times. Financially, it's seriously bad news for us, for London Walks and London Walks guides. But there are other aspects of the situation that go quite a ways toward making up for that. It's, in Shakespeare's words again, we few, we happy few. Not to put too fine a point on it, we're meeting and getting to know, better than we ever would have done in quote-unquote normal times, some wonderful people. Sharing London, our London, with them is a joy. And I'm not using that word lightly. That's us. That's our side of it. But the main point here is the walkers. They are sitting so pretty. Case in point. When I got ready to go to my Westminster Walk today, I did something I would never, ever do in normal times. I've got a fine pair of binoculars. I took them with me, because I knew I would have at the most maybe three or four people on today's tour. Three or four people can share a pair of binoculars. And to look at the detail on the exterior of the Henry VII Chapel of Westminster Abbey through a fine pair of binoculars, that's a revelation. Sarah, my walker today, in normal times, could have had that walk, had that degree of care and attention, binoculars and all, as a private walk. But it would have cost her 15 times what she paid today. Special time, good time to be a walker. There's another quote I'm partial to. It's that quote, "What did you do in the war, Daddy?" Well, we hope that some of you will maybe have that quote in mind when you take stock of the London walking tour scene down the road, when things get back to normal. We know what we, London Walks guides, have done in the war. We're out walking every day, taking one or two or three or four people on London Walks. or, as in Aaron's case tonight, taking Carolyn, she was in Virginia, she was the only attendee, apart from me, on his Natural History Museum virtual tour. Carolyn wasn't in a lecture hall with 130 other students. She had a tutorial with a leading Cambridge University paleontologist. Pretty good going for Carolyn. And good going for Aaron. He wasn't in the least nonplussed about doing it for one person. So London Walks, we're out walking. In addition, we've produced dozens of virtual tours, and there are a lot more in the pipeline. We've produced nearly 150 of these podcasts, etc., etc. Nowhere to be seen are the fair weather operators. There's no money to be made in these conditions. So, hey, what do you know? Those lively hucksters have packed their carpet bags and walked away. They'll wait it out. They'll be back when, once again, there's money to be made from walking tours. I'm thinking especially of the lot who are very good at getting people to pay for walking tours that are advertised as free. The ones who use the word free as a lure to hook gullible tourists into an extractive operation. As the old Chinese saw puts it, it's always easy to fool the foreigner. Anyway, thinking of them being nowhere to be seen these days, and hoping that when things get back to normal, when the too-good-to-be-true blandishments reappear, when the extractive operation is in full swing again, hoping that some of you will help spread the word, get people to ask, "Sonny, where were you during the war?" That's it. Good night. From London. From London Walks. Be well. Be safe. May we meet soon. In London.